Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I quit.
You quit what?
I quit this here podcast.
Well, it figures we just passed ECW for the number of episodes. ECW. We lasted longer than ECW.
I know, and see, I was kind of ashamed because I really didn't want to outdo ECW, but.
And from what I hear, we may have more listeners than their last pay-per-view had buyers.
Ooh.
Yeah, I did not know how just god awful they were doing at the end, but what I have read and heard from some people who were in the know, their last couple of pay-per-views did not make any money. One of the reasons why they're not with us anymore.
Yeah. No, but I found a job that I think we should apply for. We'll shut down this here podcast, and you and I will start a brand new career.
Oh, what's that?
Well, did you see over in the Newsaramas under the comic section? DC is seeking a new managing editor to oversee the entire comics division.
Joe.
And now, we're not talking, this isn't a creative thing, which I originally thought it was.
Yeah,
and, they could just go, fill for our podcasts a while back and, just follow those plans. No, they want someone that will oversee their schedule for all five of its active publishing lines, the 5 billion inactive publishing lines, as well as projects under its new publishing initiatives. I say that with air quotes, which is about 850 books. Apparently, work with Talent Services. You will have to herd cats. I mean, take care of approximately 400 freelancers. You will have to manage priority and exclusive talent in a stated goal to maintain a tighter pool of creators. And you should have 5-7 years of experience, which in book publishing, which I think podcasting would count, and a proficiency in MS Office, FileMaker Pro, Adobe, and thumbscrews. If you have what it takes, go over to the Time Warner career page. Thank us later. You got to go to Burbank, California, by the way.
There are a whole bunch of reasons why I would not take that job. You want to know what the number one reason is?
Having to go to Burbank, California.
No. The fact that the upper management at Warner Brothers is being shown the door.
Yeah. We're going to hire you just in time to get fired.
These are a lot of the VPs in the movie division and TV division have stopped working in order to spend more time with their families in advance of the AT&T merger, which is something we actually have talked about, how AT&T is coming in and is talking about clearing the decks. You talked about how there's, all these books coming out. There aren't that many books coming out,
Joe. Well, not comics. I mean, remember, the publishing initiative is probably all those kiddie books and stuff they're trying to shove into Barnes & Nobles and things like that. Things that are non-comics. And, of course, just because it's on the schedule doesn't mean it'll ever come out.
Right.
And you and I have already talked about that. We already know how to take care of that. Just call IDW and let them take care of the kiddie shit.
Well, I looked at the sales numbers, and they're down, and there's a specific reason why, and it ties in with this. DC only put out 56 books in February, whereas in the past, comics, they were usually putting out between 80 and 90. In the trade paperbacks and hardcovers, normally they put out around 60. They didn't even put out 30. So I don't know if this is them cutting or if this is because everything's late, but I'll tell you this, you do not want to take a job when the management is being let go and the numbers are dropping.
And not only that, but in approximately as we're recording this here podcast, which will be an entire week away from when you good folks are listening. We are 3 hours and 8 minutes away from Disney acquiring Fox.
No, it happened last night at midnight.
Oh, it did?
Yes.
Holy shit. That's what I get. Oh, fucking daylight savings time. I forgot it.
Yeah, so it happened last night at midnight.
It's a small world after all. It's a, no, no, please, anything but that. So it's all, in the end, there can be only one. And of course, today everybody's bemoaning, oh my God, Disney owns 40% of everything. Oh my, the only real worry, and this is mostly from creative people, is that there were a lot of people that were probably or will be let go because of duplication. Yep. Although Disney's not stupid. They're not going to gut their properties. I just, you know, they'll probably wait and see what they're going to figure out what to do with them.
Well, the I'd love
to see a list of everything they have. I mean, you and I know, they got X-Men, they got Fantastic Four, blah, blah, blah. But I'd love to see a list of everything they got back. I mean, you know, we're talking things like MASH, Simpsons.
Family Guy.
Do they own the Orville? I mean, all the old stuff they had, Herman's Head.
See, I was thinking more all the classic films that they've been running on, you know, a couple things. That means all the old Fox and Disney stuff is going to be available on Disney Plus. However, Disney Plus talks about, well, it's going to take us a while to get the old stuff up there. Why? Why?
Well, they're going to play that. They'll probably, they got to get out of that in the vault game, you know, where they're like, oh, this will be out just for a certain amount of time and then we'll take it off. So who knows? I mean, what did they pick up? They own what? Part of Hulu and part of, I don't know.
Yeah, they have more of Hulu now. All of the Fox cable networks, except for the Fox Sports Networks and Fox News and the Fox Broadcast Network. Which is why the Fox Broadcast Network has been putting together more and more deals with sports franchises. You know, they bought the Thursday night NFL games. They bought SmackDown for their Friday nights. Although they're already talking about how, you know, once maybe after a season or so, they might move SmackDown to another night. They're just putting it on Friday nights now in order to have, you know, basically cheap programming, because here's the thing, for the price that they're paying Vince McMahon for SmackDown, which is the most, you know, what is it? Like, I think it's between that and USA, you know, the Comcast, they're getting around $1 billion a year. And you're thinking, wow, $1 billion a year. But that means that they're filling 52 weeks of Fox broadcast Friday nights for a little less than $500 million. That's less than $10 million a night, which, that's cheap programming. It's cheap DVR-proof programming. So they pull in 1-2 million people, plus all of the DVR stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Fox may, there's talk about how they're going to be putting more and more sports on the Fox Broadcast Network. The entertainment deck has been reshuffled, but the big thing for DC is with AT&T coming in, they're looking at everything. And I always bring the parallel of WCW. WCW was untouchable because Ted Turner loved it. Well, guess what? When AOL came in, they looked
and they depowered Ted Turner.
They looked over the books and said, WCW is not making that much money. Oh, wait, you know, all of its profits are going to the TV and this and that. They went, we don't care. You're spending too much money. It's done. And Vince McMahon was able to buy it for $5 million. And I bet he's made more than $5 million off those tapes.
I wonder if that's why DC brought in Bob Harris to do the graphic novel run. Not to necessarily decimate it, which is what you and I think he's going to do, but to bring it under control so that, hey, we publish this, we sold out of this, you know, just we're making money, even though they're kind of, you know, gutting the golden egg, as to, you know, use a parable probably nobody remembers.
Bob Harris has been there for a long time, though, Joe.
Who am I thinking? Oh, yeah, no, he's the graphic novel guy. Isn't he the one who kind of boffed it at Marvel?
Yeah, but he's been he's been there at DC for a long time. He was brought in around the same time that Paul Levitz retired, was asked to retire. Or when, what was her name? Jeanette Kahn was asked to retire.
Kahn!
So, I had some news notes here, but you know, we don't need to go into it in detail, just that the amount of sales that DC has lost by cutting their number of books is why sales in February were down this year.
Poor sweet babies.
And it's, you know, and when you look at the book scan numbers for what sells outside of comic shops, Watchmen, Killing Joke, Dark Knight, boom, 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 boom.
Got nothing new.
So, I thought this week, since we did previews last week, we should do some reviews this week. Talk about what we're reading, what we like.
We like stuff?
Well, I like stuff.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you like stuff. You're still
I love
it.
Everything.
You love everything?
I just don't like everything.
No. Is that, I love you.
You caught it.
But I don't like you.
All right. Should I start off?
Sure, go ahead.
All right. I am going to take a quick gander at... that's good. I read the first issue. I don't know where it went. That's okay. I read the first four issues from Antarctic Press of a series called Punchline. Let me find the credit page here. Since they only put first names on the page, we'll go Williams, Wilden, and Barca. Punchline is essentially a two figures meet in a graveyard, and one of them is bemoaning the fact that it's over, or everything's going to catch up with her. The other one's saying, what are you talking about? You talk about capes. Apparently, the one woman is a superhero, and she decides to transfer her powers to a young teen, and it works. But the thing is that as what you want to do when you first get superpowers, you probably don't know how to use them. So the older lady sticks around long enough to sort of take the teenager under her wing, so to speak. But it gets a little complex from there because is the other hero using her to get at her old enemies? Because she ends up when they meet up with the first supervillain, who's named Joel, unfortunately, she kills him. You know, capes are hard to kill, so she absolutely killed him, and did not quite tell the teenager what she did. But so there's a lot of mystery. We don't know who actually gave the original superpowers out. She's always talking about you're going to meet the masters. I'm intrigued by the story. Like I said, I've read the first four issues, which are out. The art is good. You can follow along the characters very well. You can figure out who's who. And each issue is a little bit farther along in the story. So, you know, when we first issue one is pretty much the meeting and everything. Second issue is they've already trained a little bit. It's actually kind of interesting just the way it works. Just when the first training session goes, she says, okay, see the cell tower in the distance? It's a yellow ribbon about 20 feet up. Go get it. So she runs out and gets it, comes back. Okay, there's another one, another 20 feet up. Go get it. Boom. And a jillion flights later, not only is she moving faster, but the last one she was having trouble untying. And then she said, remember that knife I was carrying? That's why you carry a knife. All these little superhero lessons. I'm enjoying the series. I think it's kind of interesting just because we're learning as the young teen superheroes learning. We don't know what the older secret is. And I'm going through trying to figure out the names of them, because they don't really call each other by names too often. Often you're just calling each other witch or goofy teen or whatever.
Jude.
So kind of a fun storyline. I'm assuming it might be out in a trade. I again, not a good assumption to make, but if not, go check out, like I said, Antarctic Press Punchline. There are four issues out, and it'll be an ongoing as long as y'all interested in it.
The first one I'm going to review are the first five issues of a new comic by Brian Michael Bendis and David Mack called Cover. And this is one where the hook really got me. The hook is a comic book artist is recruited by the CIA and goes to conventions as part of his cover. Now, it's not that blatant. It's not that simple. It's more complex. First off, David Mack's art is, it's not traditional art. There's a lot of watercolor. There's a lot of impressionism. There's a lot of the symbolism through it. But the thing I like about it is that you really don't quite know what's going on. It starts with characters who very much seem like Brian Michael Bendis and David Mack as best friends. And they talk about, you know, what it's like going to conventions and, you know, and the artist is shocked when this person comes up to buy a whole bunch of their art at the listed price, because they talk about how, you know, a lot of people try to talk them down, et cetera, et cetera. He, of course, at first thinks that this woman is hitting on him. And then he slowly realizes, as he keeps getting invited to conventions overseas and other places, that this may not be what he thinks it is. And we as readers, we're still not 100% sure as to what is going on. It also sort of, it puts you into this world in a way that makes it more interesting, because it doesn't come right out and tell you everything. The artist is confused by what's going on, and it's told that we as a reader go along with his confusion. Now, it's easy to do stories like that where you're confused and you don't care. This is more, it's giving you breadcrumbs to follow so that you follow along. David Mack's art, you either like it or don't. I really like it. It reminds me a lot of John J. Muth and other people in the 80s who started bringing in painted comics. And Bendis still has some of the best dialogue in comics. I'll say again that him moving to DC really freshened his writing approach. His stuff feels a lot more, a lot more like he cares about it more. A lot more driven, to where by the end of his run at Marvel, you kind of felt like he was going through the motions. It was still good stuff because he knows how to tell a story, but it wasn't that feeling of his, you know, first 5, 6, 7 years where it's, oh my God, I have to read the next issue right now. This really had a feel of, oh my God, I have to read the next issue right now. And while the first story arc is going to end with issue 6, I really hope that this lasts a long time, because they've set up a very interesting world. The characters are fun. And I like a good spy story. So on our scale of buy, borrow, or ignore, this is a buy.
Joe. I would think a lot of these would be a buy because we've already bought them.
Well, I've got one or two that aren't going to get that record.
Yeah, you might be, I regret buying this. Yeah. I don't regret buying one called The Ogre from a smaller press called Source Point. Three-ish miniseries. This is by writer Bob Sally and artist Sean Daly. A three-issue series. I remember it was basically there's an ogre chained to a dead body. And okay, you had me at that. It's kind of a story hook. It's kind of a fantasy thing. It's the type of thing I would think you'd read in like an Epic Illustrated type thing. You're able to figure out the conflict that's going on. It's, you know, set kind of medievalish periods. There's fantasy creatures running around. They're north versus south. There's, you know, they're trying to get their small band to some type of sanctuary. And of course, the thing about why the ogre is carrying the body is because the ghost spirit of the said body is basically appearing to the ogre, just telling him that, you know, hey, it's mine. It's not an easy thing to do, leaving every physical thing behind. Everything matters. And, of course, when the ogre talks to the ghost spirit, people think he's kind of, you know, sick because you're talking to the body, even though the ghost is kind of hovering around the body. So only three issues. This is the type of miniseries that I really kind of am leaning towards, especially as I don't know. I go through waves where I'm satisfied, dissatisfied with the comics. And usually that has to do with the superhero themes. So I'm willing to look at smaller press. I'm willing to look at, especially if it's a mini series or just, you know, hey, this is a short story or short couple runs. And then if another run comes, so be it. So I actually enjoy this one. There is a book out. I don't know if it's been published yet. The first issues came out in October through December of 2018. So it's been a while. I don't know if the book's out. I haven't been able to see it anywhere. But if you can find it, it's definitely worth picking up. Again, The Ogre from Source Point Press. Mr. S.
The next book I have is The Cosmic Ghost Rider Destroys Marvel History.
Eh, it had it coming.
And the Cosmic Ghost Rider has become kind of a hot character. It is the Punisher after he's dead, has been resurrected and made into Ghost Rider at the end of time. And his origin gives me a headache like Cable. Here's my problem with this book, though. I don't mind the idea of, okay, Punisher is now Ghost Rider, and he's going to go back and stop his family from being killed. Here's the problem I have. Cosmic Ghost Rider is wisecracking and making jokes and screws up a lot and is a comedy character. And as I'm reading it, I just keep thinking, that's not the Punisher. He's never been a comedy character. He's never been someone who's been witty. He's not like the 80s action hero who, when he kills someone, has a quip, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger would always do the, remember when I said I'd kill you later? I lied.
Did you read the last Thanos series?
Yes.
Yeah, because that kind of is the Cosmic Punisher.
And I don't think it fits. And in this story, it really doesn't fit.
Yeah.
Because the plot of it is that he's been left to babysit one of his kids before, you know, they go to be killed. And he's telling his son all these stories about what he did. You know, he was involved in the origin of the Fantastic Four. He was involved when Galactus came. And it just struck me as a bad Deadpool knockoff. And by the end of it, I did not want to read another issue. Not only does it just not work, but it also, there's a lot of times when I can, you know, kind of ignore continuity stuff. But this is a time when, okay, you're playing with continuity. Yeah, you're making the Punisher into a joke. We've already got Deadpool. We don't need another Deadpool. And it wasn't funny. It came off as forced. It came off as goofy and not in a good way. I read the first issue and that's it. I'm done. This is a ignore for me. I probably won't go and read the, I guess there was a mini series where he tried to kill baby Thanos or something. I'm not interested in that either. You don't, if you're going to create a goofy character, create a goofy character. Don't turn the Punisher into a goofy character. It's like if you, I always use this example. It's like if you took Richie Rich and said, oh, the reason his dad has all this money is because he's a drug kingpin. Doesn't work for the character. Doesn't work for anything you've done. Create something new. Just don't do it. I don't mind if you twist a character, you bend it, but it's the old story. You bend it, don't break it. This broke it. Joe?
I picked up, so far I've only got the first two issues of Young Justice. As Bendis weaves his way across the DC Universe, I am always going to at least try the issues that he is writing. Because, again, Bendis is getting up there. The highest praise I can give a writer. You could write the phone book, and I'd pick it up. Based on the first two, I do believe I'm going to stick with this for a while. It's more lighthearted. It's fun. It's bringing back characters that not only do I know, but, you know, in some cases, people I'm just getting introduced to, but they're introduced to in such a way that I'm not scratching my head or rushing to Wikipedia to figure out what the hell is going on. As of the first two books, they're, I should say comics. I can't, how do they say it? They're going, it's tied into Amethyst world, if I'm saying that right.
Yes.
And again, I never read any of the original series whenever the heck it came out. I'm always aware they're always tying it, trying to tie it in somewhere. But so far I've enjoyed, you know, the art. Let's see. Oh, Gleason, of course. I mean, local phenom, Pat Gleason doing the art. So I'm loving that. And like I said, the story so far, just intriguing. He's doing a great job of balancing the different characters. Part of me is thinking, well, maybe I should wait and read this as a book because it's really driving me crazy. Now I got to wait 30 days for issue 3. But, you know, again, that's kind of a high praise. So for me, I'm enjoying this immensely. I would definitely put this down in the buy category. And since I've got the issues in my hand here, you obviously know that I did. Mr. S.
The next book that I have that I'm reviewing is one that I actually bought a long time ago, but I didn't have time to read, and it slowly floated up to the top of the box, and that is Pogo, the Complete Syndicated Comic Strips, Volume 1. Believe it or not, Joe, I have never read Pogo. Pogo was a syndicated comic strip by Walt Kelly, who actually started it in comics back in the 40s, and then he was able to get a comic strip late 40s. And one of the things about it was, this was back when working in comic books was slumming it. Being a cartoonist, once you got a syndicated strip, you had it made. And Pogo, first off, the art is absolutely gorgeous. It tells the story of the critters who live in the Okefenokee Swamp. Pogo, his friend Albert the Alligator, Churchy, all of these other characters. And this first book is more about just creating the characters, setting up jokes. It becomes kind of political allegory later on. But it starts now with a lot of dialect jokes, a lot of Southern jokes. And the art is amazing. Fantagraphics does just a wonderful job of highlighting the art. They've even got some of the original art here and there. So you can see Kelly's blue pencils before inks. And, you know, think about that. This stuff's been around since 48, and they were able to get this from his archives. It goes through, it prints every daily strip. And there's also in the beginning of the book an annotation, which I think is important because when you're reading stuff that's this old, a lot of the jokes that are based on what was going on in the world may not translate. The other thing is it's got an introduction by Jimmy Breslin, who was a famous newspaper writer who talks about what it was like, you know, hitting that deadline, doing that deadline every day. If you've never read Pogo, go ahead and pick it up. It doesn't matter that it's funny animals. It's good at any age. This is one of those comic strips that was beloved at the time. Now, because, you know, there weren't a lot of cartoons and other things that are still around, it's all mostly forgotten by people unless they're comic fans. But there are four volumes out so far, and I've got them all, and I cannot wait to read volume two. This one gets a big buy.
Next on my list, from Alterna Comics. These are the guys in the beginning of the book that are selling comics for $1.50.
I saw one of their books at the grocery store this weekend, by the way. On the newsstand.
Cool. So that's good for them. What I always look at what they offer. That what's tricky with them is that they don't publish monthly. So if you're picking up a series, you got to keep an eye on it. Every other month, another issue will come out. The one I'm looking at is a 5-issue limited series called The Actual Roger. And I'm trying to find the creative team. Oh, there it is. Hank Tucker and Wes Locher. And what the deal is, there's a superhero, Magnanimo, it's the man of Magnolium. I don't know, but he is like the Superman archetype. Everybody wants to play him when you're playing superheroes. And, well, the actual Roger ends up accidentally getting exposed to something and becomes a super. He gets a superpower. He can basically fly about 2 feet off the ground, give people rides, and move pretty fast. And this does get the attention of the government right away. So what they do is they basically give them the parents a choice. You either we got to figure out if he is a heroic trait or a more villainous one. Is he a happy accident or an unhappy accident? And therefore they give his son a costume and they got to take him away for training. And of course they give him to Magnanimo, who, of course, is very underwhelmed that the sidekick they decided to stick him with can only fly 2 feet off the ground, has no other superheroes, has no other possible way of becoming a sidekick and things like that. As a matter of fact, Magnanimo's best idea is to park the actual Roger in a McDonald's near a playland while he goes off and takes care of the supervillains. So the series is from the director of The Tick, which could be what got my attention. And the art is just fantastic. Very easy to follow. The characters are easy to recognize, which, of course, is one of my chief concerns. Only one issue of this has come out. But, geez, for $1.50, you're getting a ton of reading. They employ very small panels. I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 on one page, the way it used to be. And the quality isn't up to the glossy that you see from most of the mainstream because they do use actual newsprint. And it's kind of a bummer because when the first time I read it, I put a big crink in the spine of one of my copy here. So I was a little
upset. No longer mint!
No longer mint! Throw it out! The other thing I love, absolutely love, is in the very back page. Stop! Don't put this comic down until you find a comic shop near you. Not only do they put the comic shop locator website, which I don't even think it is a number anymore. Nobody uses it. But on the back is a list of all the comic shops in the nation that and worldwide, actually, that carry their comic. And in Minnesota, of course, you got Hot Comics and Collectibles, Level Up Games, Mind's Eye Comics, and The Source Comics and Games. So definitely go check those guys out. And I will probably revisit this once I've read all five issues. But based on the first one, for $1.50, this is a lot of fun. It's superheroes. It's taking a different spin on it. It's kind of humorous. It's got some serious tones on it. And it's one that I definitely recommend. So on our three-point scale, this one, well, I bought it, and I recommend you do too. Mr. S.?
The next one I have, DC still is putting out those 80-page giants that are collections of short stories. And the latest one is Mystery of Love in Space.
Yeah, I mean, the title.
This is a fun book that showcases short stories featuring characters who don't have their own series, such as, well, it was... before the Female Furies miniseries started. So there's one of the Female Furies. There's Bizarro. And while $7.99 is an awful lot for a comic, it's an 80-page with no ads. So you get plenty of story for your money. I like anthologies. I wish they did better. I'm really happy with Marvel Comics Presents. I read 2000 AD. This is a good anthology. Unlike some of the ones in the past where it's been, okay, what was that? This was very much each story had a beginning, middle, and end, different art styles that worked. The Bizarro story was beautiful. I would have bought it just for the Bizarro story. But the opener with the Female Furies was also incredibly well done and shows that the people involved understood Darkseid and understood Kirby's New Gods. So as long as DC keeps doing these, I'm going to keep buying them. I love anthology comics. If you like anthology comics, this is a good one to pick up, and I would say a buy. If you don't like anthology comics or are, you know, a little iffy on it, it might be a borrow. I wonder if they'll collect a lot of these and trade paperbacks and stuff. It seems like it'd be a good little package. But DC is turning things around in my mind because I'm starting to pick up more DC books, and this is one of the ones I picked up, and I give it a solid buy. Joe?
All right. Where are we now? Is this our last review?
Let me take a look at our time.
I think I've done four so far.
Let's see, we're at 41 minutes, so we could do one or two more.
Okay. My next one will be first two issues of Star Trek, The Q Conflict. I picked this one up because, first of all, it's a miniseries. Second of all, it's got everybody in it from the original series, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, and Next Generation. The only thing they didn't put in, which probably would have giving them the hat trick, as if they reach back to Enterprise, but I haven't seen any IDW Enterprise comics. I don't know. Maybe they don't have the rights to that particular run.
Well, and Enterprise didn't do real well. I've noticed in the big crossover books and stuff, they aren't putting out Enterprise novels anymore.
No, and it's really too bad, because I think, I wonder if that's because they're trying to keep the continuity cops at bay by just kind of pushing that aside. And just letting Discover run on its own, whatever. But the Q conflict, obviously, Q's involved. They're pulling some. Essentially, what's happened is a bunch of suns are going supernova. By analyzing one that goes supernova right in front of them, Picard's able to figure out Q has something to do with it. Q is basically just saying, "Hey, you know what? We've got a bunch of races here races we've seen before that want to become, what do they call it, omnipotent, and Q's trying to decide whether or not they do it. It should take a couple decades or two, but the supernovas are just a byproduct of their fight, and, you know, that's unacceptable, of course, to Picard, and he gives Q a suggestion that Q absolutely loves, and so what they do is they drag in the crew of Voyager, the crew of Deep Space Nine, the crew of the original series, and they basically, it kind of reminded me of, you remember Corey getting picked for ball in gym class, you know, well, we picked this person, we picked that person, and the super races pick their teams, mixing up all the groups. Some of it's kind of interesting because not only they when they pick up like Commander Sisko, I think he's captain at the time. He shows real hostility to Picard, which if you remember in the beginning of Deep Space Nine, he did. And then they kind of realize, wait a minute, your uniforms are new though, right? And they're like, new? I said, what is your star? How long have you been there? About 3 years or so. Oh, hell, not time travel. And needless to say, they're all gobsmacked when Kirk and crew come walking over the hill. So, the first issue was kind of fun and interesting setup. Issue two, I guess I was underwhelmed by the way the game was played, but I guess it's just round one. So I don't know how many issues they're doing with this. Probably six, I would imagine, because that usually seems to be IDW, although they'll sneak in a five or two. It's a fun series. It could be so much better, but really, they just don't have time to go through everybody's reactions, the person, what everybody's thinking. It could almost be a book, you know, just rewritten as a book where we could get what everybody's thinking and, you know, how much do you say and how, you know, what are people's reaction? You know, will Kirk hit on Seven of Nine? We don't know yet. We haven't gotten there. There's a few other little nice things like Tuvok recognizes Sulu and he's like, Captain Sulu, you know. And I need more of that from this particular run. My choice was either this or the year five, year six that they're doing concurrently with the original series. I decided to just go with the miniseries. It's fun. It could be better. Again, I might revisit it when we finally get to the end. But so far, and I don't normally say this, but so far this is on a borrow. So I would either wait for the graphic novel because it might read better as one. Or just, you know, yeah. And not that I'm recommending this, just kind of look at it on the stands and put it back. No, I didn't want to buy that one anyways.
Or buy it, you know, borrow it when it's a book at the library.
Or wait till it's in the quarter box. I just don't know. You have options, I'm just saying. And again, I may revisit that because, you know, we're only two parts in and, you know, I'm enjoying the little characterization bits and they just don't seem to have enough of it. Art's good though. There aren't too many lines, just perfect amount of lines.
Well, I finally read Ziggy Pig and Silly Seal. Yes, Marvel's doing their 80th anniversary by having new versions of their older books, and this is their version of a funny animal book. It's written by Frank Thierry, who hasn't done a lot of stuff at Marvel for a while. Let me see who it's drawn by. Frank Thierry and John Cirilli were the writers. Jacob Chabot is the artist. I don't know him. It is drawn in a very funny animal style for the funny animals and in a realistic style for the humans. The story is basically that Silly Seal has gone on to become a huge comedy star and Ziggy Pig has not. And I don't care for the idea. There are a few good gags here and there, but in the end, it feels tired. It feels like, okay, we've done this bit over and over and over and over. We already have a, quote, funny animal, unquote, in the Marvel Universe of Howard the Duck. And this is kind of a tired showbiz story that has been done in parodies relentlessly over the years. I really wish that this one would have been a lot better because the other sort of 80th anniversary books like Journey into Mystery, which was science fiction, and Crypt of Shadows, which was horror, and the just amazing stuff Howard Chaykin did were all great. And this one just kind of fell down and didn't work. And Frank Thierry's one of those writers who he hasn't done a lot of work for Marvel for a while. And after reading this, I can see why it just didn't quite work for me. I think there could have been a fun story in doing something like this if it would have taken a twist on it or been a little more witty or had a less cliched plot. But in the end, when I got to the end of it, I felt like I'd kind of wasted my time. This is an ignore. Joe?
All right, I gotta get this pile of comics because I, in one glorious marathon day, read the brand new Uncanny X-Men series 1 through 12.
Oh, wow!
The annual.
And you are someone who hasn't read the X-Men in quite a while.
No, and this is why it's interesting, because to me, I love X-Men. I started way back when John Byrne, Chris Claremont were working their magic. My first X-Men comic was X-Men 137, The Death of Phoenix, the first time. And even I understood at the time just how big a comic that was, that they were killing off Marvel Girl. I didn't understand who the Phoenix was. I didn't get who. I kind of understood Wolverine. I remember seeing Wolverine and Colossus from An Amazing Spider-Man around 161, 162. I knew who Nightcrawler was from them issues. So again, I recognized Cyclops. I knew Professor X. I knew the Beast from the Avengers. You know, what I knew of the X-Men, I knew from Marvel Team-Up and appearing in other parts of the universe. I knew a few of the crossovers. One of the few X-Men comic books I actually bought was from Schindler's. I think it was like an Uncanny X-Men 30. It had Spider-Man in it. I remember I picked that up because, oh, look, Spider-Man's in it. And then we're talking the original X-Men, you know, way back when. So I followed X-Men through years, and really, I think by the time I got my comic shop, it just lost me. There were too many books. There was too much going on. Wolverine appeared in five different series. None of them made any sense. The continuity was a mess. So for as many X-Men comics as I sold when I had my shops, I've been divorced from the X-Men since about 92. And, you know, I always tried it. Even now, you know, Corey and I talk about, okay, I went back. I'm looking back. I've got the X-Force Omnibus. I look at it. I'm like, ooh. And I like Rob Liefeld. Don't get me wrong. It's just some of the art is just hyperkinetic. I've tried to jump on board. Again, they always seem to turn around and just too many X-Men series, too many going on. I just didn't want it. So I took them at their word. I said, okay, we're going to go with this. X-Men Disassembled. I read the first three issues when they first came out. And okay, they're enjoyable. And then I put it aside. And it took me a while to get them all together. So I just sat down and started reading it. And oh, baby, I'm back. Absolutely loving it. There were a few times I had to stop and talk to Corey. mostly.
What happened here?
Again, a few spoiler warnings if you haven't read it. But, you know, it starts out basically just a big brouhaha. It takes a while, but they find out. Well, you got to realize when you get to the page of one story and there's Apocalypse chained to a wall. Okay, something's going down here. This ain't Kid Apocalypse. This is the Apocalypse. Eventually, we find out it's X-Man and Legion are basically having a war with each other, both using and trying to convince the X-Men to go with them. What I love about this series is, first off, nobody's in it that isn't in another book. There was no Gambit. There was no Rogue. They've got their own book. We didn't see Wolverine because God knows what Wolverine's doing. I mean, I guess there's a cosmic Wolverine and a regular Wolverine. I'm still fuzzy on that. I'll go ahead and check out Wikipedia later. So the whole battle goes through 11 issues, and it was just a fun read. I mean, I don't know how they're going to do this in graphic novel. They'll probably like, okay, here's 1 through 6. Here's 7 through 11. Stupid. Just put it out as one big-ass graphic novel and enjoy the run. Everybody's in it. Characterizations are great. The art is phenomenal. You can tell who's who. again, I'm a little tired of the whole mutants bad. Hey, but if that's what they're going to go with, and the reason I'm tired of it is because there's been so much crap going on in the Marvel universe. Mutants are the least of your friggin' problems. You think somebody would be going, you know what? And Dr. Doom's a problem, you know, and you know, these big ass Sentinels that Avengers are making bases out of, that's a problem. But there's been so many world shattering events. Mutants are not the problem. Rant over. But, oh, by the way, at the end of 11, they all disappeared.
What?
Which leads me to the hook. I mean, I've reading through this and parts of me are like, okay, battle. Okay, they're gone. I've seen X-Men disappear before. Well, guess who shows up? Well, two of the people who weren't in the original fight, Cyclops and Wolverine. Now, Annual One explains what happened, how Cyclops came back. I'm assuming Return of Wolverine will explain to me how Wolverine came back. I haven't read it. It's still in my pile to be read. And this is about the time when I had to text Corey. And I think I asked what happened to Cable. Why is he young? And apparently it happened in Exterminators?
Yes, Extermination.
Extermination, which I believe was, what, 5 issues or something? So maybe yes. I'll go out and try to find that. A big question is, where's Professor X? I looked at Wikipedia. I guess he's around, but he's on a mission, and there's only one person who knows about it, and she hasn't said anything about it. It's in Wikipedia, people. If they know it, it's not a spoiler. As far as young Cable, that was what? Astonishing X-Men? Or was that was where Xavier was? I don't know. He's around somewhere. But I read, I'm pretty sure these will show up either on what do you call it? Marvel Unlimited. Again, I read Wikipedia just to catch up. They're probably on the newsstand. But you don't need to know this crap in order to enjoy the story, because they give you cross references, you know, in the little footnotes, which, if you can tell by my excitement, are working, because I'll probably run down to the source tomorrow and pick up Exterminators and maybe look for Astonishing X-Men Volume 4, is it? Trade paperback, just to read what the hell is going on. Yeah, I'm on board. As long as you don't splinter the X-Men up into 500 billion miniseries, if you're going to... the other question was, what the hell happened to the young X-Men? And again, I guess that was part of the young Cable thing. So again, just like we've talked about in the past, who's that guy? It was Bendis. He didn't put the toys back before he left to play the sandbox. I guess
he was told not to put the toys back.
I'll give him that. But somebody else did put the toys back. So this is a good, if you're like me and you're just fed up with too many X-Men books, this is the one to jump on. I have no idea if issue one's around. Being at their every two, were they going weekly for a while?
Yes.
So you should be able to find them in some form or fashion at your better neighborhood comic shops. And I'm real excited to see where they're going. And, of course, they'll be back. I mean, obviously, the world thinks they're dead. But I'm not going to say anymore. Because, I mean, I could just go on and on and talk about how excited I am about this series. But Marvel, you got me back. I'm on the X-Men bandwagon.
And the last one for me, I picked up the first issue of the new Ms. Marvel. And let me open it up so I can give you the creative team. Let me whip this out. Woo!
The creative team has changed from issue 1 to issue 12. So I don't know who's doing it. But the scene from 11 to 12 was good enough where I don't care.
And the reason I bought it digitally, the digital version is 115 pages for $3.99, because it gives you the script and the penciled pages and et cetera, et cetera. So the new creative team for Ms. Marvel #1, writer is Saladin Ahmed, who I really loved his work on Black Bolt, and he seems to be kind of a rising star at Marvel. Penciler is someone I don't know, Ming-Yu Jung. And it's kind of a fresh start for the character because it's a new volume, new creative team. And it starts a new story. For some reason, the first page is set on a different planet, talking about Ms. Marvel, who lived years and years ago as the Destined One. And it says, another world, the far future. It then pops back to Jersey, where Ms. Marvel, this is really a good get-to-know-the-character. You get the story of her origin, her supporting cast. You get a situation to begin. The art is very new reader-friendly. It's kind of that current mix where it's more aimed toward kids. You know, not as much hatching and detail, much more animated looking. I really like this style, and the storytelling is excellent. You know, you can easily follow what's going on panel to panel, page to page. They follow the rules of storytelling. Really good package. And if you were worried about G. Willow Wilson leaving Ms. Marvel and the character not being as charming as before, you don't have to worry about it. She's still interesting. She's still written like a teenage girl. The supporting cast, she actually checks in with all the supporting cast members and kind of gives you an update of where everybody is, which I like, because to me, one of the things about a Marvel superhero book is that the supporting cast is just as important as the hero, because the supporting cast is what makes the personal stuff fun. This is a good first issue of a superhero book aimed at younger readers, but good enough. It's one of those where, you know, teenagers will like it, but I like it too, because it's smart, it's informed, it's interesting. They don't overdo a lot of blood and gore, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just a well-done first issue. This one gets a buy, although, you know, I said I bought the first issue. I bought the director's cut because it's got the script, it's got the penciling, then the inking, then the coloring. I'll probably buy the rest as trade paperbacks like I did the original series. But if you buy the director's cut, it's a great package because it really shows you what goes into making a comic book. And Marvel's doing this with more and more of their first issues digitally. So I really recommend the director's cut of the first issues as well, just because you get so much behind-the-scenes stuff. And even as a kid, I always liked that. You know, we don't get a bullpen bulletin page anymore. But here we're getting, okay, here's the script, here's the how it broke down, et cetera, et cetera. And there we go. You know who else gives you more than your money's worth, Joe?
Is it these guys, our sponsors?
Why, yes, it is. That's right. Here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads. And our first sponsor is me. That's right. Your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them bi-weekly. You can get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. Subject, advertising. Thanks.
And you say I never learn.
Hey, I'm learning how to do these segues better. And you would think that, you know, after 399 episodes, I would.
Well, yeah. We've only had 8 years to...
Nine.
Ugh.
We started in 2010.
Well, when did we actually get it so that we were doing weekly?
Oh, that was... I don't know. I think it was after the first year, but still.
You know, it'd be cool if one of our vast listeners could check that out, because all of our episodes are free. We don't put them behind a paywall. They're always there for you to upload or download.
Don't upload any extra episodes. No.
Yeah, but it's not like we have a Wikipedia page or anything. I mean, just saying.
But we do have other podcasts that are part of our network.
Get back! Shut up!
Yeah! Just like this. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network has all sorts of podcasts. We've got Scrabbling Across the West with Dave Cafell and his lovely bride, Stephanie. They travel across the country playing musical gigs, and at night they sit down to play Scrabble and talk about their day at scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There's Novelcast over at novels.solitairerose.com, where I take the novels that I've written and turn them into audio podcasts. Currently, we are doing a novel called Do the Job, which is a murder mystery set in the world of 1980s professional wrestling. Then, over at badadvice.solitairerose.com, me, Corey Strode, and Wolfie B. Bad, along with Dan Moore, give bad advice to people who send in questions. That's bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is growing. Be there! I have to admit that I'm still pretty excited about the fact that we have now outlasted ECW. We have more episodes than ECW. We've lasted longer time-wise than ECW. Yeah, ECW just kind of came and went in a comet. It lasted 396 episodes. And we're at 399.
I'm only upset because, you know, I'm a Paul Heyman guy.
Well, so am I. But, you know, you're also an eBay guy. So, Joe,
let's get
to your favorite part of the show. No, not where I figure out what to do with all these leftover candy canes from Christmas. It's Joe, what's going on the eBays?
Okay, this is a two-parter. First part will be here. The second part will be in geeking. Because the first part, people must be getting their tax returns, because I've had an explosion of sales. Just amazing things going out that, you know, things that I forgot I had. For example, I just sold Spawn Blood Feud, miniseries from Image 1995 by, can we call him Alan Moore? Do we got to call him the writer?
No, he was Alan Moore because he got to keep the ownership back then.
Oh, well, good. Because this was one of his goodies when he was doing it. Spawn versus the Vampire. Tony Daniels was the artist. The copies I had a few signatures on it. So that was kind of cool. Corey, did you ever read the fourth series of Man-Thing, written by Hans, was it Rodinoff? No. It was the guy who was a writer of an upcoming Marvel film.
Oh, I don't know.
It's only three issues. I think this is the one where Man-Thing started talking.
Oh, yeah.
So, I had the three issues. I don't recall reading them. It's available in a graphic novel if you want to check it out. But what did they do when they got to issue 5? Wait a minute, wasn't Man Thing talking before? I don't know. I sold a Sergio Argoni's Gru versus Conan from Dark Horse.
That was a good story. Was it worth the wait? Of course not.
this might have been the deal of eBay, because sets are going upwards of $50, although individual issues are hard to come by. And I had mine for a near $19 because I have enough problems getting things on eBay. I usually don't go back. But it was a fun series. And I don't know if the graphic novel, did they do? I know they limited how many they made of those. So these are out of print, people, because the rights to Conan are back at Marvel. And, of course, Sergio Argoni's always owned GRU. So if you're at all interested, check it out. Another miniseries out of Dynamite, Sherlock Holmes versus Harry Houdini, a 5-issue series out of 2014. I recall reading it and liking it, but not enough to keep it. So this is my version of borrow. I sold Avenging Spider-Man's set, every issue. I already blew out number 9 and 10. Those are the Captain Marvel issues that are going for silly money. So I put the other ones up cheap with free shipping and let them fly. Other sets I sold. I know Corey and I are fans of the Dan Slott Michael Elred Silver Surfer run.
Yes, I am. And I have the omnibus sitting right behind me.
As do I. And so I figured, let's get rid of the original runs. I sold the first run, 1-17. I only picked up 8 of the second run. Don't ask me why. And I just, again, put it as a set, sold it as ready to go. So that was kind of fun. Not everything was complete. I did have a 51 Star Trek Deep Space Nine comic book run with stuff from Malibu, DC, Marvel, all sorts of miniseries, all sorts of one-shots. They priced out at about $1 a piece. And somebody snapped him up right away. I also sold a Red Sonja run from Marvel. I don't recall if I talked about this before, but I picked it up. They're all very fine. And, of course, I had a complete aneurysm when I did. You remember when I sold the Old Man Logan set?
Yes.
And I accidentally put in the miniseries from Secret Wars in with the regular run. And then when the regular one sold, I went back and realized my mistake. Yeah. Well, and this one, I pull it out, and it's early morning, and I'm putting it together and go, okay, issues 1 through 18. Holy crap, I've only got issues 15. What happened? Oh, God, I'm missing 3 issues. This is terrible. This guy paid some serious money for this stuff. Oh, I better send him an email. I apologize if you want the run. And then it occurred to me, wait a minute. A quick run to Atomic Avenue. They only had 15 issues. There never was a 16, 17, 18. Oh, God, I sent another note back saying, sorry, I got to learn not to do this before I drink my coffee. And he sent a note back saying, I knew it was the original run. You had them all pictured. I just bought it anyways. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And if 16, 17, 18 ever do come out, I'll make sure you get them. Because Marvel has done that in the past. Remember that goofy issue of Ghost Rider that came out years afterward. That's impossible to find.
And they're putting out another issue 109 of Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Oh, let's see. Some other one-shots sold. A Secret Wars variant, number 4. Not the goofy one Corey's been ragging on online, but the fun one that came out in 2015. Cartoon Networks presents number 6. Corey, do you remember which Cartoon Network animated show was in this particular one? It's from 1996.
Wouldn't that be Space Ghost Coast to Coast?
He was in the run. No, this one was Cow and Chicken.
Oh, okay.
A show that my wife utterly, utterly despised, even though Dana loved it. I was like, honey, it's not for you. Just let her watch it and enjoy it. I sold an Emerald City Comic-Con variant cover of a Top Cow series called Angelus, which basically was a new heroine. And 6 issues later, I guess she's disappeared. I don't know. She's probably hanging out in Top Cow somewhere. Civil War, Young Avengers and Runaways 1-4. Star Wars Lando 1-5 from Marvel, which was a really good series. If you never picked it up and you like Star Wars, it's kind of neat. And it kind of explains why Lobot was the way he was or is or whatever. Another series I bought in book form, Star Trek Legion of Superheroes 1-6. Sometimes crossovers don't work. This one did work. And again, it's out of print because it's Star Trek Legion of Superheroes. I think they publish it once, they go their own separate ways. The final book is one goes all the way back to 1981. World's Finest. Corey, tell us about World's Finest.
World's Finest, it started as a World's Fair promotional comic. And there for a long time, they would have Superman and Batman stories where Superman and Batman were doing stuff on the cover, but they weren't combined in the comic itself. Eventually, as page count shrank, they had Superman and Batman team up in every issue. Now, there were times when that wasn't the case. I think there was in the like early 70s, it was a Superman team-up book. In the late 70s, it became a dollar book, which had Batman, Superman stories, and then a bunch of other stories in it. But World's Finest is mostly known for being the Batman, Superman team-up book.
And the one I had was during that dollar run in 1981. And this was back when they had Superman, Batman, Shazam, Green Arrow, Red Tornado, kind of an anthology book, their whole dollar line. I never picked it up in the original run. I just, I don't know, for some reason I just had these. I probably had these because I was trying to finish this Shazam run. And this was back when he was more realistic. And, you know, finding them in near mint shape is hard to do. This one was very fine or so. I still got a bunch more on the eBays. So I basically, yeah, I just had a banner couple weeks where things are selling. I don't know if it's because people are getting cooped up, the spring fever's coming, but I've got a lot more coming. I put a bunch of Showcase on, if you're not the comic, but the actual black and white reprint books. All of them are out of print. Some go for silly money. The ones I put up are above mid-range. They're just books that I enjoy having them, but I read them and it's like, oh man, these smack of Silver Age-ism. Just ridiculous stories. And of course, the cool ones I'll keep. But everything else that's up, check it out. KRAYZ. Tell me you heard it on this here show, and I'll include something fun for you. Like if I were to reach out and grab something, I would grab, well, look at this. Star Trek Deep Space Nine Trials and Tribulation paperback with introduction by David Gerrold. I'm that type of guy. I would just toss it in as a freebie. So come check it out.
Come get some.
Come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I talk for an hour and a half about my new 55-inch screen TV, which is 4K. Ooh. Which is right now I have it set on the NASA channel, which
What's
is showing
going on with NASA?
They're actually showing Earth from the space station.
Oh, fun.
They just have a camera, and they're just showing Earth from the space station.
Do they show, like, where on Earth you're looking? They used to have, like, a little map that would show off.
No, they have a pop-up that will give you facts about it. But,
oh, okay.
It's got a built-in Roku, and, well, we're getting to geeking. But no! It's freaking a geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
Corey, you know the perils and tribulations of having a parent that is sick while you're hundreds of miles away?
Yes.
Yeah, my mom had kidney stones over the weekend.
Oh!
Yeah, and she's 80 years old. Her birthday was on St. Pat's Day, so not good. About the only plus is that my sister went down to visit her for the 80th. We all tried to go. I don't have any time because of my hip shenanigans that I went through. I probably could have figured out a way, but you know, trying to get weekends off at work is crazy. And it's just, she's okay now, but there's a little tenseness going on. What's going on? And my sister's like, oh my God, get her home. Hospitals down in Florida suck. People are stupid. I really think if my sister wasn't there advocating for her, it could have gone a lot worse. But so little hairiness. I mean, I was ready. I talked to my wife. If something happened, I'd have been on a freaking plane and gone. I was at the airport. I would have just kept my uniform on, put my coat on, and gone. Just say, I'll buy what I need when I get down there. But knock on the fake particle board. We'll see what's going. This isn't so much a freaking, but for now, Corey, we always have segments of the show, and I think it's time to retire this one for now, because it will be back. Oh, like a rabid raccoon, it's good to be back. Hip Watch is now retired. Well, for the moment. I mean, but basically,
that a good thing.
It is, but you also remember I've got another hip that's going to need replacing, and it'll probably go bad before I can get it fixed. And my goal is to try to get it get it off Christmas again, because that was kind of sweet. If anything, I'm having a tough time getting back to the grind of working full time after, you know, sitting on my duff on Oxycontin and watching Deep Space Nine reruns. So no more hip watch. I mean, I'm like I said, it will probably surface. I'm hoping I can forgo the hip as long as I possibly can. You know, I do have cortisone shot I can take, and the doc is like, anytime you're ready, call me. I won't actually see the doctor again until this fall. Matter of fact, a year after I had the operation, kind of the final blessing, because that's how long it takes for your body to be as good as new, I guess. Still a little physical therapy to do, so, but things are going good there. So kind of a goodbye to a fond. Okay, it wasn't fond. It sucked, but it's gone. Corey, what are you freaking on?
I got comic stuff to freak on. First, Joe, you've got the Netflix, don't you?
I does.
Now, I have not watched it yet, but there is a series on there based on a Dark Horse series called Umbrella Academy.
Ah, the Dark Horse, yeah. My daughters read it when they were young.
Dark Horse did what they should have done and printed up a whole bunch of extra copies, thinking that, oh, we're going to sell some. And they printed up what they thought would be 6 months worth of copies. They're all sold out now, and the way that printing works in comics now, they're not going to have any more for at least 3 months. I understand using printers in other countries to save money, but this is a case, and there have been a few lately, where it's okay. Doing that is costing you money. Yes, I know you have contracts with printers overseas. You should probably have somebody here in the U.S. as a backup. With Stan Lee's passing, the Spider-Man comic strip, which he was plotting with Roy Thomas, this Sunday ran out of the Stan Lee stuff, and it has ended. What they're going to do with it now is that they are going to have reruns for a while, and then there will be a new strip. They've just said that they would have a new Marvel Universe-based strip. Roy Thomas, who's been working on it for quite a long time, says that he doesn't know what's going to happen, doesn't know if he'll be invited to write it. The artist, Alex Sevelick, if you read Spider-Man comics back in the 90s, he was the guy who drew Web of Spider-Man. He had also worked over at DC. He's been working on that strip for a long time. He's now out of work. And the inker on that strip announced his retirement. That's right, Joe Sinnott, at the age of 92, after working in comics for 69 years, has retired. I'm not going to say that the Spider-Man comic strip was one of the greatest comic strips of all time, but I did enjoy reading it. I thought that it was always kind of a nice little nostalgia strip, especially after Stan decided, well, the reason Spider-Man got married was because of the comic strip. Stan wanted Spider-Man and Mary Jane to get married, so they got married in the comic strip and in the comic. And then when the marriage was undone, they undid it in the strip for a short time. Stan had those strips become a dream and kept Peter Parker and Mary Jane married. And so the longest running, it ran for 42 years with Stan writing or plotting it and Roy Thomas working with them for at least the last 10 years. Roy's kind of cagey about how long he worked with Stan on it. But I'm kind of sad that the strip is ending. As a wrestling fan, I will say this. The build to WrestleMania this year is one of the worst builds ever. I do not care about these matches. For the WWE Championship, it's AJ Styles and Randy Orton. I couldn't care less about Randy Orton. I know he's been around for a while. I know that people think he's a top guy. There are people who know more about wrestling who talk about how smooth he is and how good he is in the ring. He bores the hell out of me. The Brock Lesnar match is Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins. The build for that has been poorly done. It's going to be Kurt Angle's last match against Baron Corbin. Really? Who cares? The one match I was really looking forward to, Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey. There we go. Charlotte Flair has been crowbarred into it. I just wanted to see Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey. I'm not a big fan of three ways. And I know they're saying the reason behind the scenes is because Charlotte was promised that when the women were the main event, that she would be in that match. But there are times when it's, you know what? No, it's not what the crowd wants. We got a no-holds-barred match between Batista, who hasn't wrestled in years, and Triple H, who looked pretty old in his last match. So it's going to be a couple guys in their 50s. I am just not looking forward to WrestleMania. And the fact that it's going to be 12 hours long. I know I'll enjoy it. I know it'll be a good show. But part of the fun of WrestleMania is how everything builds to it. And this year, the build, I'm just not caring about at all. And then the last thing I am freaking about, Warner Brothers is going through a huge shakeup with a lot of their executives being moved out. DC is hiring somebody to handle the schedule. Here's what I don't understand. Isn't that the fucking editor's job? And it's worrying that when you look at the numbers, just the raw numbers of the number of books DC is putting out, market share, Marvel has a 40% market share. DC has dropped to a 29% market share. And they're putting out fewer books in March than in February. If I worked at DC in an editorial capacity, rent don't buy. Joe, what are you geeking on?
Okay, people, go back to your previous podcast. All that stuff Corey and I were talking about, how bad the weather was, how crappy the snowstorm was, et cetera, et cetera. Forget about it. It's over. Everything's melted. Well, almost everything. I mean, there's still snow piles here and there. There's this huge dirt mound over in Midway area of St. Paul. And this sucker ain't going away till June. But unfortunately, as you probably notice, if you're watching the news, people in low-lying area, that snow has just got nowhere to go. It's melted. The ground's still frozen. It's just going to ugly, ugly, ugly. So I hope you're doing okay. Things are coming back. My ice dams are gone. My truck seems to be working. All that week of bad geeking, knock on fake wood again, seems to be going okay. I did get off on Friday, Saturday last week. I had a deal where I went to training, TSA training, sir. And it was, oh my God, it was basically newbie training. It was like I was back in class 16 years ago. You are part of the TSA. We spell it TSA. Oy, oy, oy. And it's all because they have this level one training where they want me to go up and, sit at exit, help with tickets, do DOing, where you take off your shoes, your laptop, please don't bring any bombs through, that type of thing. And you got to be trained to do it was before you just do it. And whatever. The sad thing is I will probably never, and I mean ever, go up to checkpoint to do that, because oftentimes I'm the only supervisor in my particular area and they're not going to pull me up to do this stuff, even though it's busy. Not to mention the fact when you're standing in line at checkpoint and nothing going on and the line's huge, I'm probably downstairs looking at your luggage and that means I'm busy as well. So just kind of a weird thing. I mean, I understand why it works for newbies, but oh, that was a rough 3 days. But I got Friday, Saturday off. I will mention on Saturday, I got to go drink with the Irish Day, or as our good buddy Turbo calls it, Amateur Day. And we went and I haven't done this like in 5 years. 5 years ago, we went to a parade. We wandered around. It was kind of fun. This year, everybody, because we're all old now, we sat at a single bar at a table on the second floor. Could not get corned beef and cabbage because they wouldn't serve it on the second floor. I did down a Reuben pretty fast, and I drank green beer, and we flirted with the girls who were lined up for the restroom. I mean, this was like being at a stadium. You know, the women were just lined up. They would try to jump into the men's room, but the security guard, oh, man, she was on it like Oprah on a canned ham. Everybody out, everybody out, everybody out. And I'm like, hey, guys don't care. We just don't want to hear you giggling. You know what I'm saying? And after the beer stopped working, oh, I went to Fireballs. I was feeling no pain. It was good. It felt good. And when I got home, I ate again. I drank a lot, took some aspirin, woke up the next day feeling groggy, but not sick or headachy. So I got away with drinking with the Irish. And, you know, the next day, Chris and my wife, were both like, you know what? I don't think we're going to do this again. So, well, I haven't done it for 5 years. I don't know what your excuse is. You've
got a year to make it to the next one.
Yeah, it's not like we do it constantly. We're not, you know, 18. Get drunk one night, tear one off. I mean, that's how Dana got around. Anyways, I, on the Friday before, had the orgasmic joy of rush buying. The type of rushing buying not seen since last year's MSP Spring Con, which this year will be held May 18th and 19th, 2019, at the Minnesota State Fair in the Grandstand. I think advance tickets are on sale now. The guest list is up. The dealers are locked in. I mean, this thing filled up fast. And if you're interested in going, either as a creator or a guest or a dealer, get a hold of the boys right away. If you want advance tickets, go to mcbacomiccons.com. Check out the Facebook page, because they have their link where you can get advanced tickets and get as many as you need. Also, I'm taking stuff for the charity booth, which gets me back into part two of the eBay things, because with all that awesome money you guys gave me, oh, I went on a buying swag tear. First of all, Half Price Books had their spring coupon sale where – and I'm trying to find, oh, here it is. My notes are on top of it. Where it starts out, Monday, Tuesday, 20% off. Wednesday, Thursday, 30. Friday, Saturday, 40. And Sunday, 50% off. And as you go from store to store, and I hit each store multiple times, they would stamp it. So you could just keep going from store to store. I think Corey and I did that once, where we hit as many of these stores as possible. And we can do it in a single day. And I posted a picture of all the swag I got. I mean, I've got, comic-wise, I was able to fill in a couple more books in my Essential collection. I found X-Men Essential 6 and 11, which was kind of neat. I found some books, a Monty Python Frequently Asked Question book. This is by the group Applause, Theater and Somatic Books. I have raved in the past about the Doctor Who and the MASH version, and since I'm a Monty Python fan, I figured, what the heck? You know, cheap enough at half price, pick it up. We had a wrestling connection. I do love my wrestling books. I picked up William Regal's Walk in a Mile. Oh, damn, Price is covering up the thing. Anyways, he did his
walk
own autobiography.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Thank you. Because the Price sticker is covering up half of the thing. Fortunately, the stickers peel off very well. So I'm looking forward to reading that. I picked up a paperback and called The Sandman Book of Dreams, which is basically people doing short stories in the Sandman universe, from Clive Barker, Tad Williams, Gene Wolfe, edited by Neil Gaiman. So, you know, it gives his personal okie dokie. I found an entire run of Del Rey's Babylon 5 books. Not all of them are canon, but they all look to be fun to read. Unlike some of the other books and universes out there, everything in Babylon 5, for the most part, ties into the overall story. So they may be referring to things that they talk about in the regular series, but only they covered in the book. So I was excited to get them all cheap. I mean, I've seen them here and there, but when you get there and you see them standing there, I like, whatever, just I'm in a good mood. So pick them up. I did pick up a Showcase book of Showcase 1, which is the original run of Showcase, including Firefighters, First Flash. I don't know if the Green or Lantern's that high, but, you know, this was a good book to read. I did pick up a number of things that I probably end up on the eBays, and we'll talk about those in future things. I did stop by our good buddy, Steve Brown, man of renown, down at Cedar Cliff Collectibles. Got a lot of good deals from him. He's always got good deals. I mean, it's almost a must stop. I stopped even by Issues Needed Comics, picked up some comics I was missing. And with some of the proceeds that I did off the eBays, because it was things that were donated from the charity booth, I bought some really cool stuff that's going to probably go to the MCBA charity store. I've got like a mini Lady Death porcelain figure. I've got a Lady Death snow globe. I don't know if you remember that thing, Corey. We saw
it
was back when I had Hot Comics. And he gave me a really, really good deal on this stuff. So I'm kind of like, I'm just happy to get it. And I did go back on day two on the 50% off day. Now, the first thing I did is I found myself a copy of Marvel Visionaries Incredible Hulk Volume 6 by Peter David for half price. Number 5 and 6 are out of print, silly money. They had it for $40, which is about what half it goes for on eBay when you can find them on eBay or Amazon. Half of that is $20. Good enough for me. I got it. I can read it. Now, when I went through half price the first time, I actually I had my 40% coupon going, and I was trying to decide what I was going to buy. I found a copy of Batman number 1, New 52, which is, again, just a silly, silly money price book. I don't know why this one, out of all the New 52 books, is up in price, but I've sold multiple copies, including signed ones by Scott Snyder that I picked up when I was stationed out in New York. Midtown had them on the shelf. It makes me wish I could go back and say, Joe, pick up a dozen of those, damn it. They were selling them for like $5 just because he signed them, and they all come with that certificate of authenticity. It was that or Edge of Spider-Verse number 2, which, as Corey knows, is the first appearance of...
Spider-Verse number 2 is the first appearance of Spider-Gwen.
Very good. And, I mean, that, too, is a silly price book. The only thing was that one had a little tiny printer flaw on it. And although at the price I could have got it at, it was pretty good, I was like, you know what? I've already sold a couple of these. When I sell stuff on the eBays, I want to sell it at the right, condition. I'm not going to say it's near mint, even though it was probably sold that way off the shelf. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to pick up the Batman. I'll come back on half price day and I will pick that up. And Corey, you know what happened on half price day?
I do not.
It wasn't there. And you know what? I wasn't shut. No, don't shed a tear for me, because I picked up. Oh my God, I think I just gave myself a hernia. Oh, Omnibus. Ecstatic Omnibus.
Oh, I love what? That. I have
that is silly money on the eBays. I got mine. They had it at $100. I got mine at a mere $50, which for all the reading in this sumbitch, X-Force, 1981, 116 to 129, Brotherhood 9. Well, that's not saying much. Ecstatic 1 through 26, Wolverine Dupe 1 to 2, Ecstatic Presents Dead Girl 1 to 5, and materials from other stuff. I mean, this is a thick, thick book, and I'm just going to try to get the page count towards the very end. And this, let's see do they even give it? I don't think they give it. You snarky people. But this is just fun stuff. I mean, Milligan, Elred, Trigata, Cook, for $50. And I think when I bought it, I bummed out the guy who was standing next to the case, because I went to the front and got the people to come by the case, and I picked it up. And he went for like a Secrets of the DC Universe hardcover from the, I think, 70s or 80s. I went for the Ecstatic and just ran away. So I got my, I spent some swag. I mean, I had a, you know what? I've gotten past the point where I buy something and I regret it because I don't do that anymore. I don't buy something and go, oh, I shouldn't have bought that. I'm in such a great mood. I'm thinking of, because we all know Corey is never, ever going to be home to watch that 55-inch 4D TV. I might have to make some more keys up and we'll make out a schedule so you can come over and take a gander at his TV. Somebody's got to use the damn thing. Okay, back to my notes. Blah, 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 blah. Hey, you know, that's pretty much it. I had more fun this week. And like I said, tomorrow's new comic book day. I can't wait. Corey, what are you geeking on?
Oh, let's see. First thing I am geeking on is my 55-inch Roku TV. Oh, my God.
You won't need to get that eye surgery done with that.
Well, I ordered it. It's a refurbished TV from Amazon.
Ooh.
And I had put it on, basically, when they told us like a year ago that we were going to get a bonus. I looked through and read. It's like, okay. And it was like a $700 or $800 TV back then. So I put it on my wish list. And through the year, the price has kept going down. Down and down and down and down and down. And then finally, it hit $350. Now, also, if you have an Amazon credit card, 5% of your purchases are Amazon points that you can use. And I had over $150 in Amazon points because I buy groceries and et cetera, et cetera. And I was just looking at it, and it's like, you know what? With the Amazon points and the price cut, it's $200 for a 55-inch TV with Roku already attached. This will lead to a slight freaking.
Uh-oh.
But I ordered it, and, you know, you have your Amazon day. My Amazon day is Saturday because Saturday is the day I'm always home. But normally, for my Amazon day, they bring stuff by at, like, 4 or 5 in the afternoon. So I worked at the group home till 10 and was figuring, okay, I'll go to the gym, I'll take care of this, I'll do that, and then the TV will be there, I'll spend the night setting it up, and then I work at the group home that night. Well, as I'm getting in the car, my phone pings me, and I look, and oh, there's a text message. Your television has been delivered. Joy!
Folks, you're witnessing a Corey-gasm.
I get a orgasm. This box is almost as big as the front door. I bring it in. Joe, you've seen the TV stand I have.
Yeah.
I am not joking. Swear to God, it takes up the TV stand and part of the stand next to it. This thing is monstrously huge. So I hook it up. And, you know, because it's a Roku TV, it's going to have to download all my Roku settings. So that's going to take 45 minutes. So the other TV, which I found out was only a 32-inch, I bring in my bedroom. And in the bedroom was the TV from the shop. Now, I don't know the whole story of when you bought the TV, but this is the TV that you had in your comic shop. And then when you sold it to Brian... Brian had it there, and then when Christy bought it from Brian, she had it there, and then when the shop was closing up, Christy said, you know I owe you, you know, tons of money, just take what you need, take whatever, you know, to make it even. And I said, well, can I take the TV? She said, sure. So that was the TV I had in my living room until I got my flat screen TV a few years ago.
Is that for me?
Then it moved to the bedroom, and now... it still works, but no one wanted it. I offered it to some of my coworkers. I offered it to the group home, and I offered it on one of those lists where it's, hey, I got free stuff if you want it, free cycling. Nobody wanted it. So that's the end of the comic shop TV, Joe. It was taken to the recycling place.
The good die young.
Lasted 20 years. Over 20 years.
Yeah. Let's see if your 4D lasts that long.
But then, you know, I hooked it up and it's like, okay, what does the 4K stuff look like? Oh my God. They have all the nature stuff on there. It looks like you're looking out a window. You know how I love the slow TV? So I put it on slow TV and it's another one of those, you know, the train is going through all the hills and in the Netherlands and stuff. And I'm like just sitting there watching it. It's just beautiful. And then finally I put it on to watch a TV show. I put on Star Trek Discovery. Oh, wow. Oh my God. The other thing is the screen is big enough now. There are shows where they will have people texting back and forth and they just show the texting on the screen. On my 32-inch, I could never read it. Now I can read it. Also, Star Trek Discovery. I got caught up on the last two episodes. We went to Talos 4.
Spoilers! That doesn't matter. But...
No, I'll just... We went to Talos 4.
Is this the first time they went there, or is this the mission that made them decide to put General Order number 1 up?
This is after General Order number 1.
Okay.
So Pike had emotions. And then they go to the headquarters of Section 31. For anybody who says they don't trust, they're ignoring the continuity, they're ignoring the canon. It bite me. I also went and saw the Captain Marvel movie.
And?
I liked it. There was a flaw in it that did not ruin my enjoyment till I was on my way home. Now, Joe, have you seen it?
I have not.
Okay.
I've been trying to get tickets, but it keeps selling out.
It's very much an origin story. It's a lot of fun. My only problem is that there wasn't a decent villain. It reminded me a lot of Iron Man 3, where there was a lot of cool stuff going on, but there really wasn't a decent villain. And the fight at the end was just kind of, okay, let's show how powerful the hero is. This felt a lot like that. Still, it was a lot of fun. There's a lot of Easter eggs. Typical, really well-done, well-produced Marvel movie. The next thing I am geeking on is an ad that Marvel had in their comics today. They tweeted it out earlier today. Hickman returns to Marvel in July.
Take my money now!
They did not say which book he's coming on to, but boy, I would guess it's the X-Men.
Oh,
that's all, you know, whatever he does at Marvel, I'm going to buy. But if he does the X-Men, oh, man, because, you know, he plans things out years in advance.
You know, I haven't been this excited since the Toys That Made Us did an episode on Pogs.
Yeah. Wait, they did a one on Pogs?
Well, if not, they should have.
Well, they've got a new season coming out of that. But other than that, I actually on Sunday had a lot of time to read comics, and then I'm looking at the weather, and it's supposed to be in the low 60s on this weekend with sun. I am already planning. I've got a set list for my Spotify to listen to music on the deck and read comic books. So kind of thinking about that. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us talk about comic books, not just for an hour and a half. Not just for 399 episodes. Not just for 9 years. But longer than ECW was in existence. And next week is our 400th episode.
Oh, that's utterly amazing. We got to have something special planned for that.
Well, I was going to make a kind of a minor announcement on this episode, Joe.
Minor?
So, are you sitting down?
Should I be? I'll stand up.
No, you should sit down.
Oh, okay, I'm going to sit down.
There's a comic book convention, kind of a small one, at the St. Cloud Library this summer. I have had my arm twisted hard enough that I will be attending as a guest.
Ooh. He's unretiring, folks.
Just think of it as like when Shawn Michaels went over to Saudi Arabia And you know how bad Shawn Michaels looked in that? And afterward, he said, yeah, I should have stayed retired. That's how I'm going to feel. But I am going to be going to that convention. We will probably be streaming it. We will be doing a bunch of panels. And more surprises to come, including the date and place and everything. But there you go. I am coming out of retirement for one night only.
It worked so well for Ric Flair. Of course, he never did come out of retirement to wrestle. He came out for a street fight.
No. He wrestled in TNA.
Yeah, I know. I'm ignoring that. Sad. But Corey's coming out not to attend a Comic-Con, but to do a street fight.
No, there won't be any recruits there. No. You treat it like it's the crown jewel. I'm coming out of retirement for one last time. Except I'm not going to shave my head like Shawn Michaels did. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half. And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
So no matter what we do, we're never, ever going to get rid of our explicit rating on the iTunes or anything, are we?
Probably not, no.
Okay. Folks, here's Will Ferrell saying the word fuck. Corey, hit my music.
Fuck, 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 fuck.
Mom, what's one thing that you can't talk to me about?
My sexual fantasies.